Welcome to the SEMO Marketing Podcast, where we interview business owners, leaders, or marketing professionals to find out their lessons and stories for success.
Welcome to episode 102 of the SEMO Marketing Podcast with me, your host, Simon Dell. Thank you very much for tuning in. If this is your first time listening to our podcast, then welcome. If you have come back from a previous podcast, then welcome back. Now, today on the show, we have a lady based in Sydney, New South Wales and Australia, called Brooke Burns, the very first other podcast host that I've had on the show, unless you kind of include Mike Goldman, because he's slightly a podcast host. But Brooke is the host of the PR podcast, or the PR podcast, which is an essential podcast for budding PR professionals. She's going to talk to us about PR, public relations, and about how to use that to grow your business. She's been doing this for a long time. She has a lot of experience. She's been a publicist. She's worked for Network 10. She's worked in London, all over Australia. Brooke knows pretty much everything you need to know about public relations. So very informative, very educational. I think you'll get a lot out of this interview. And before we jump into that, the usual housekeeping requests. If you want to find out a little bit more about us, you can find us on the internet at semoh.com, spelled C-E-M-O-H. If you want to talk to me, drop me an email, simon@semoh.com. We're on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, soon to try and do a bit more on TikTok. But yeah, come and have a chat with us, find out what we do. We are Australia's only labor hire marketing agency. We do marketing experts on demand. So find out a bit more about what we do. And other than that, it would be fantastic if you get the chance to go to iTunes or the PR, whatever it's called now. It's called Apple Podcasts. There we go. And give us a rating and review and let us know what you think. Obviously, it'd be fantastic if you put 5 stars in there. You don't have to do that, but that will be good. And yeah, that's pretty much it. The last thing, Gilberto, who's had 102 credits so far, and I hope he's happy with that. Sure, he's not. He might be listening to this. Thepodcastboss.com. He does all of our audio. He makes this sound slightly better than it did when I recorded it. But if you want to do anything in audio, especially podcasts, then he is the person to talk to. So that's pretty much it. Let's jump into our interview today with Brooke Burns. Welcome to the show, Brooke Burns. You are in sunny Sydney today, aren't you?
I am, and it is absolutely sunny Sydney today. It is 30 and there's not a cloud in the sky.
Beautiful. That's how we like Sydney. Give us a little bit of the overview about who you are. You're here to talk about PR, but let's sort of get a little bit of the potted history about Brooke Burns.
Sure. So I've been in PR for about 20 years now. So I studied PR and marketing at Curtin Uni in WA, and I moved straight away into television publicity. So I did a couple of work experience units at university. And one of those was at Channel 10 in WA. And because of that, I picked up a job at Wind Television, which was also based. And Wind Television, for those that don't know, is a regional broadcaster in Australia. So I picked up a job as a publicity assistant there. So I was there for about 18 months, but I'd always, since, I guess, high school, my parents aren't from Australia, they're from overseas. So I'd always wanted to go and work overseas. So the goal was to go work in London. So I did 18 months at Wind Television, and then I moved to London. So I continued to work in London for 4 or 5 years again in television publicity, and then I moved to Sydney and worked in television publicity at Channel 10 there for about 5 years, and then I moved into hospitality PR, both in-house for Merivale as a PR manager. Merivale is a really big hospitality company based out of Sydney, and then I started my own company, Savannah PR, about 7.5 years ago. So that's it in a nutshell.
Cool. And you have your own podcast as well?
I do, yeah. I launched that in August of this year. It's called The PR Pod, and it is for emerging PR professionals. So those studying PR, recent graduates, or those in their first handful of years of their PR careers, really to help try and guide them on professional development and I guess, be a practical resource to help them work through specific tasks that PRs may face, whether it's writing a media release right. or putting together a guest list for an event or something like that. It's a very practical okay. guidance and support driven. Mm.
Now, I think probably the one thing that stood out the most to me when I looked at your profile the other day was in part of your experience back in the UK, you worked on Footballers' Wives. I'll apologize straight away, Brooke, that of all the one thing that I took out of your profile was Footballers' Wives. But Footballers' Wives back then was a bit of an enigma, wasn't it? It was a bit of a it was a bit of a cult brand, cult TV show, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. So for those that don't know, Footballers' Wives was it was kind of the back of the kind of Beckham era where the celebrity footballers had glamorous wives and were getting up to all kinds of nonsense. So it was a television show based around, I think, maybe 6 to 8 core characters, some of which were football players, some of which were their wives and management and that kind of stuff and their antics. Yeah. And it was super, super, super over the top. And it was a lot of fun to work on the filming of that, absolutely.
It's the sort of TV show that a lot of women used to love and a lot of men could never understand why women used to love it so much.
I guess back then it was kind of like, I mean, this is pre-Kardashian, so it was
I was just about to say the Kardashians, yeah. It was a precursor kind of this, to that kind of environment.
Yeah, it was over the top. It was just unbelievable the things they were getting up to, but a lot of their storylines and their scripting was inspired by things that had actually happened, so it wasn't that far from the truth.
But you've been sort of, you said PR 20 years. What kind of took you into the PR world, you know, at university? I mean, you know, to have started something at 18 and still be doing it 20 years later, that's that's quite an achievement for a lot of people these days.
So there's two things that led me to it. So one was at high school, I was a very studious student. I wasn't necessarily the smartest, but I probably was one of the ones that worked the hardest. That was just my nature. So I was pretty good at English. I was always like a student representative. I liked being on organizing committees. So I guess I was kind of in that communications naturally kind of sphere. And when you're in high school and you're looking through what subjects you're going to study in the last couple of years to then help you get into university. My mum was flicking through a course manual of all the different university courses. She came across something called public relations. So it was my mum that said, I think you have got all the natural skills and the interests that would make public relations seem a good fit. And she was right. So I did PR and marketing. Didn't really enjoy the marketing side of it. To be honest, I was really more connected to the PR side of my degree. And that's how I got into it. And so, 10 years in television, which I loved, and then just wanted a little bit of a change, which pushed me into hospitality.
So talk to us about what PR is, because obviously there's, depending on who you talk to, you get different interpretations and different opinions. And for small business owners and, you know, marketing managers out there, PR is often one of those dark arts that they don't really understand. So explain to us what you perceive, you know, PR is.
I look at it as me being a conduit between the media and a business, and it's my role to come up with ways that will let the public relate, i.e. public relate to your brand. So that is generally, we're talking about media relations, and media relations is getting media to write about your brand, and all of that's for free. So advertising, just to be very clear for those that don't know, advertising is when you go to a magazine or a website or a television station, you spend $2,000 or $200,000 getting your ad in print or online, whereas in PR, you are not paying a publication to write about you. It is the PR person, the agency, the consultants, is their responsibility to get your business written about. So it's about finding angles and stuff that the public will relate to. So that's how I define it, as public relations.
And how do you feel that then fits in with the rest of marketing? Because whenever I sort of explain to what marketing is, I often draw like a big circle, write the word marketing just outside it and then write inside that circle branding, advertising, experiential. Marketing is the big thing and then everything else sort of fits inside it. But I often draw PR just slightly outside of the circle. Because I kind of go, it kind of doesn't operate. It doesn't necessarily have to operate on its own, but it can operate on its own. How do you see it fitting with the rest of the marketing pie?
So it's interesting, and there has definitely been some debate around, I think it probably would have stemmed from PR saying, you know, does marketing fit into PR or does PR fit into marketing? And yeah. I think they just go hand in hand. I think they all have equal value. It just depends on what the goals are of a particular business as to this point in time, whether the focus is 90% on PR and 10% on other marketing elements or vice versa, it's more strongly on marketing. So I think it depends on a business's needs as to where it fits in. But I think there is always space for PR. It just depends on what goals you have and what messages you're trying to communicate at that time, whether PR is right for you at that moment.
And you obviously specialize now in hospitality PR. I guess, do you do other PR as well, or is it just hospitality?
100% hospitality, yeah. So when I was at Merivale, the big hospitality group I was mentioned in Sydney, I realized, because I kind of was coming in contact with a lot of PR agencies that were hosting events at these venues, etc., that there wasn't much specializing in terms of hospitality PR agencies, and there was a lot of hospitality venues around, and I could see that being a space that was growing, and I was obviously already in that space. I'd only been in it for a year. So that's what inspired me to start Savannah. At that point in time, I was with a business partner, and then we broke the business apart maybe five or six years ago. And because of that, when we first started the business, we were going to be broader lifestyle, and that was the intention. But the reality is I'm a big believer in doing something very, very well. And I could do broader lifestyle stuff, but the way I structure my business now, it's just me and has been just me for five and a half years. So I want to do something brilliant, and that's hospitality. I could do hospitality very well and then fashion moderately well and a little bit of small business stuff moderately well, but that's not me, and that's not the service that I want to provide.
So, I mean, you mentioned that there was a gap in the market for hospitality, but is hospitality more right for PR? Now, you know what I mean.
Absolutely. So where PR comes in as, I guess, being the most important part of the pie with hospitality is when a venue launches. Lots of small businesses launch and think, you know, we've got some interest. I had a previous restaurant or cafe before, so let's just see how it goes for the first 6 months, and then we can go from there and maybe bring PR. And that is the worst mistake you can make. What happens in that six months is – either your consumers, the people that are buying your coffees or your cocktails or whatever it may be, and the media are not provided with a clear understanding of what your business is. They're just absorbing the information they get from social media, websites. If your messaging is not correct, and I have seen this time and time again, people think, oh, you're a bar. You're not a bar, actually. You are a bistro or you are a restaurant. But because you use the word bar all over your website, it leads people down the path that you don't want them to go down. So having PR on board from the start of the venue launching enables you to get your messaging right, which then can be disseminated across all your different assets. And it sets the expectations up correctly for media if they come into review, and consumers when they come in, they know exactly what that product is, versus 6 months down the track bringing PR on board and spending the next 3 to 6 months trying to change the messaging that was just interpreted incorrectly at the start. So that's where PR plays the biggest, certainly in my world, that's where I do a lot of my work, is the launching of venues, and then a smaller portion is coming on board to try and help them refocus who they are and who they're meant to be targeting.
And I guess that kind of, I mean, hospitality seems fairly obvious. You know, it's new restaurants, new bars, new hotels. You know, people want to read about them. People want to go experience them, be trendy, be the first people there. Kind of, it's like a little bit of a badge of honor, isn't it, going to those new venues?
For some people, absolutely. They like to be across that kind of thing. And that's one of the other benefits of having PR at that point, is that you get mentioned across a number of different publications, ideally in that first couple of weeks, that first month of launching. And, you know, as you would well know, Simon, and probably lots of your listeners would know, you know, the more touch points someone can have with a brand or business, the more likely it's going to be top of mind. So they've read about it in one publication, they might keep it, they might think, oh, yeah, that's great. I remember reading about it in Broadsheet or the Courier Mail or wherever it may be. And then they read about it a second or a third or a fifth time. I think, oh, hang on a second, this sounds like something that I would be really interested in. And then they might see an ad, or they might see some social media, or they go to the website, and that reinforces the imagery and the messaging. And they think, great, this looks like just the place I want to go to. So it's just about increasing those touch points.
If you're a small business, well, question before this, obviously it works well for hospitality. I think we can all see that. Is there other industries that it works exceptionally well for? And is there other industries where you would sort of say, look, no, you know, PR isn't necessarily something that you might think about first off the bat?
It would come back to a few things. You don't want to be doing PR unless your assets and where people will engage with your product or your service spot on. For example,
right.
It's no point me having an article run for a small business. Let's say it's a dentist, and for some reason they've got some interesting stuff going on and they get a piece of PR for that. So I read that piece in whatever publication it is. I think, oh, that sounds really interesting. That's a great way to look at dentistry. I want to check it out. I go to their website and the website's shocking. You know, it makes no sense. Yeah. The imagery is awful. And I look at social media. So if those assets are not representative of your brand and who you are, then sure, people have read the article, but there's no conversion there because you're losing them with those digital assets. Vice versa, if you have a piece of, you know, media coverage run somewhere and someone goes into the restaurant or the bar and they have really just not got themselves sorted out yet. They're still trying to work out the menu and they've got brand new staff in, so staff are still learning the menu and the service gets pretty crappy. Again, those things all affect it. So I don't think it matters what industry you're in. PR is relevant for you. However, you need to make sure that when people read an article that you are able to capture that conversion immediately. And you need to make sure that, I mean, the only reason you're going to get media coverage to start off with, if you've got something newsworthy to talk about, you have to have something that a reader, the public, will go, that solves my problem, or that's a better way to solve my problem than what I'm using at the moment. And whether that is a candle, whether as a dentist, whether that is a restaurant, it makes no difference. You just have to have something that will make your target market stop in their tracks when they're reading that story and go, that's interesting. I can see how that's going to benefit me. If you're just announcing I've got a brand new bar, what's the value in that? People aren't going to write just because you're brand new. You've got to talk about what is it that you offer. Have you got the biggest tequila selection? Whatever it may be. So PR is relevant to absolutely everyone. It just depends on making sure your assets are right and that you've got something newsworthy to communicate.
And I guess for some businesses, you know, it might be manufacturing businesses, might be industrial businesses, the channels, that PR channels, again, might not necessarily be the same as, you know, the hospitality channel. Hospitality channel obviously wants to be in, you know, potentially fashion magazines and, you know, the normal media, but manufacturing industrial, they might have their own, you know, they might have business media, they might have their own industry media.
Correct. And it may just be that the industry that you work in, there there may be 12 different publications that you are relevant for. And like you said, if it's a business-to-business one, it might be Machinery Monthly or whatever it may be. And there may only be two trade publications in the whole of Australia. However, you need to think about it from the perspective of the people that may buy that machinery from you. They also read The Australian, or they read The Sydney Morning Herald, or they read The Courier Mail. So what is it about your product that you could reach those people that still read those other publications? Sure, you're not going to end up in a fashion magazine, you're not going to end up in a music publication, but it's about addressing those trade publications that are immediately relevant for your business and then looking at where else your target market is that will buy your product, consumer product, what other publications are they likely to read, and then trying to find an angle that is relevant to that publication to make them want to write about it.
PR suffers from the same thing that I think general marketing suffers from, is that a lot of businesses go, how hard can it be? I'm sure we can do it ourselves. And I'm sure you've read disastrously bad press releases and communications from business owners that sort of, when they're trying to do the job themselves. And I always now say there's no point in trying to tell the business not to do it themselves, because they're going to do it themselves. You know, it's just people's nature. If somebody does want to sit down and want to try and get a story out there, if it's a small business that they can't afford a PR professional, is it worth them doing it themselves, or should they just forget about it? And if they are going to do it themselves, is there something, some basics that they should get right?
So the first thing I would probably look at is, what value do you put on your own time? And if you've got a couple of hours up your sleeve every week, then maybe give it a crack. But think about it, you know, like, so if I was working for a business, and this is what I would recommend if you had your own business and you couldn't afford PR, is writing down 4 to 5 key messages about what makes your business unique and interesting, and what's the newsworthy angle that someone might want to write about you for. So, and they are short 4 to 5 sentences that everyone can do, but it can take some time to articulate it. So when I do it for a brand new client, those key messages, literally 4 to 5 sentences, can take me an hour to an hour and a half to articulate them perfectly, word for word, making sure there's, you know, that's in there. So yes, absolutely, you can do them. But that will probably take someone that's not experienced in a few hours. Then you have to think about the fact that you need to collect the journalist information. So you need to read the publication. You can't just send it to the Courier Mail. You have to work out what about this story is relevant to the Courier Mail. What about this story is relevant to the next publication? Because all these publications have slightly different readerships and slightly different content. Yeah. So you need to position it correctly for that publication. So again, absolutely, if you've got the time and energy, you can research that. I would go through and read those publications, get a sense of what they write about, who writes those stories, how often they come out, when was the last time they wrote about something that was similar to yours. And then, again, so we're looking at probably 12 hours of research and stuff, plus the key, you know, the key messages, et cetera. So that's, you know, that's a well over a day of your time. And then you've got to start pitching it out. So once you start adding up all of that, and everyone's value of their time and their business and how they work is different, but think about it from that perspective, is that you're going to be spending at least 12 to 24 working hours in order to be able to do this effectively. And is that the best use of your time?
And that chasing up, I think a lot of people don't understand that PR professionals spend a lot of their time doing.
Absolutely.
Is opening up that sort of little black book, making those phone calls, sending those emails, badgering the shit out of journalists. And, yeah, you know, so you're kind of almost doing a bit of a sales job there, aren't you?
You are. And I think the reality is the amount of times I send an email out with a very tailored pitch and a journalist says, great, I'm going to run that story, is limited. What often happens is I have to follow up, and then I follow up a third time saying, look, I'm going to assume that this angle didn't work for you. So here are another 2 or 3 ways why I thought this business or this service or this product could be relevant for you. Would one of these work better? So it's about, you know, and so again, that's time and energy. I've got to think about what those different angles are and how they might apply to that publication. It's not just applied to that business, but to that specific publication. So it's really time consuming, and that's what you're paying PR for, is you're paying for them to do all of this for you and to know your sector. And that would be my recommendation. If you look at this and go, right, I don't have the time to do this and I do need to hire someone, then I would try and find a PR person or agency that specializes in your sector, because you want someone that goes, yes, I know the editor of Machinery Monthly or whatever it may be, because that's going to cut down the time they're going to have to be trying to find information and work out what the right angles are. So if you can find someone who is a specialist in your field, then that will be I think a lot more cost effective for you.
And I guess the big challenge for a lot of small businesses as well is the fact that PR often doesn't, it may not give an immediate result, it may not give an immediate return, and it might be 6 months of nothing for then something big to happen that then kind of makes all that time worthwhile. Is that still the case, or is there, you know, does it sort of operate in a different way?
No, it sure is. So look, it can work in both ways. A business could have one story run in their local newspaper or a national newspaper, and they could see that day the transformative effect it has on the rush of inquiries they've had or sales, and they can gauge, wow, we've had X amount for the last 3 months, but as of today, we've now got this amount. That only happens in situations where which is quite unique, and there's something that immediately converts people. The problem is, like you touched on, is that you can't necessarily, though that's a very unique situation. What usually happens is people read about a bar. That doesn't mean they go and make a booking that day for that bar. They read about it that day, and then in 6 weeks' time, someone says, do you have any bar suggestions for this neighbourhood? And you go, actually, I read about something. So there is virtually no way of tracking whether someone saw something on social media, whether they saw something written in a publication, and how that converts to sales. So if you're the kind of person that says, I want to know if someone reads a story, what's my ROI from that? That's not the way to track it. The ROI is looking at a campaign and going, right, if I can get my business written about in 5 publications or 15 publications and they're the right publications, then I know that, or your PR, or you can certainly find it out yourself, that 2,000 people read this magazine a month and 150,000 people read this a day. So if you've been in these seven publications, your brand or business has been exposed to whatever it is, 300,000 people. So your brand awareness has achieved, you've achieved that via brand awareness. So it's tricky, and that's why finding a specialist in whatever field you're going in is really important. I think otherwise you'll just get chucked out there and maybe not get that ROI from where your media coverage runs.
I guess a perfect example of that, and this obviously goes beyond just hospitality, but one of my friends I go out for a drink with maybe every couple of months has an unhealthy obsession with going to rooftop bars. It's something about him and rooftop bars. I don't quite know what it is. But so whenever we go out, I sort of joke to him. I said, right, rooftop bar this Friday night, yeah, or this Saturday night.
Yeah.
And what will happen is that one of us will Google new rooftop bars in Brisbane or something like that. And then obviously up these lists appearing in Google, and we pick one of them, look through the list. But that list may have been written 3, 4, 6 months ago. And it may be on a media website. It may be on a blogger's website. It might be anywhere.
Yes.
But it quite easily have been placed, or it could have been a PR agency that sort of worked with that writer to place that list of, you know, seven of the best new rooftop bars in Brisbane, of which two of them are the PR agency's, you know, clients. But that sort of then, affects our decision on a Saturday night of where we're going to go and spend, you know, $200 on a few drinks and a meal. But that, you know, as you quite rightly pointed out, that isn't you don't see that return until 6 months later.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, those lists are gold, and they are very effective in the lifestyle industry. So hospitality, fashion, beauty, what are the best top five mascaras you should be wearing this winter, or
yeah,
what are the best coconut waters to buy, or whatever it may be. So those lists are great because, like you said, they're a very easy, quick way of people going, okay, here are all the mascaras that a reputable publication or a reputable writer is recommending that I look at. And that's a very easy way of me to collate and review information. So in the broader lifestyle sphere of PR, it's very good to be able to get into those lists. And sometimes it is exactly that. Sometimes I look at lists and think, well, my venues are 3 of the 10 on that list. Sometimes that's because I am presenting the information to that journalist in an articulate way that makes them go, well, you've just made my life really easy, Brooke, because here's 3 out of the 10, so I don't need to look elsewhere. I know they're a credible venue, et cetera, et cetera. So, yes, it can be that sometimes there are multiple venues or multiple businesses on a list, but I think at the end of the day, lists are one opportunity for lifestyle, and it becomes, and they're a little bit easy to get onto if you've got a good product. It's a lot harder to be able to secure a story in a national newspaper.
Yeah.
You need a lot more crafting of angles to be able to secure something like that.
A couple of sort of final questions. Influencers is one thing that kind of has been part of the PR landscape for maybe the sort of past 5, 10 years, maybe the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Is that something that you deal with personally, influencers? And I guess the second part of that question are they still valuable? Is that still worth, you know, spending the money on trying to get these people to, you know, share your product or turn up at your venue or recommend your brand? You know, should we be taking that still as a good opportunity?
So I think it comes back to what your product is or your brand or your service and who your target market are and where that target market is going to engage with information. If your target market is 18 to 35-year-old women, there is a 99.9% chance that they are going to be on social media, and it's probably going to be Instagram. If you are 35 plus, perhaps you're skewing Instagram a little bit more Facebook. So you have to look at where your target market is and how are they going to be consuming information. And if they're going to be on social media, then your product should be on social media. So you should have your own social media presence with your brand, and you should be looking at how you can engage influencers. So with hospitality, I do not use influencers a lot of the time. A lot of my brands are not in line with influencer-friendly venue. So a couple of my clients are cafes. Right. They're bright, they're fun, they're bubbly, they've got really over-the-top, beautiful breakfast dishes and gorgeous cocktails and that kind of stuff. That works aesthetically very well with influencers. So the influencers I deal with when I do are all unpaid. So I need to be giving them content that is relevant to their Instagram feeds and their Instagram stories. They've got to want to put it on there. It's got to be a benefit to them if they're getting something for free. And vice versa, if they're going to be posting about a venue of mine, then I need to make sure the right eyeballs are on that. So that's one part of it, is looking at it from that perspective. And then as to the relevance, yeah, I think because social media is such a huge part of our lives and people are on it so much, it seems like a completely wasted opportunity to not be on there in terms of using influencers. However, as long as your target market consumes information that way.
Okay. Does that make sense?
Does that answer the question?
Yeah, it does. A last question for you, which I guess is one that I hope none of us ever have to come across, is that the conversation about bad PR. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to flag, you may not have read this because this happened in Brisbane yesterday, but it actually happened in my local shopping centre, Indooroopilly. So there's a little cafe in there called Jamaica Blue. It's part of a small chain. It's one of those, you know, chain branded cafes type thing. And they had a disabled lady ejected from the cafe yesterday for reasons that are still very one-sided. So obviously the media's got hold of her side of the story. You know, she's put it on Twitter, and obviously, you know, she'd recently had an operation. She'd quite a famous lady. She'd stood against Peter Dutton in his constituency the last federal election. She lost it. She stood for Labour, and she didn't manage to beat him. She'd had an operation. She's in a wheelchair, a powered wheelchair. She's with her son, I think, and one of her other children, and she's managed somehow to get herself thrown out of this cafe. When you read the story from her side of things on Twitter, which, you know, most people do, we all know about Twitter, you know, there's this obviously an outpouring of sympathy for her, for, you know, being a disabled person, being subjected to this prejudice, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's obviously only the one side of the story here. Nobody's gone and, you know, spoken to the cafe owners, or at least the cafe owners haven't made a statement. And, you know, it was the cafe owners that actually called security, and then it was the Indooroopilly shopping centre security that ejected her. So there must have been a reason for it somewhere. We just don't know what it is. Where I'm getting to with this story is obviously the challenge that a little cafe like this has, which is potentially a mum and dad business, even though it might be a franchise, it's still mum and dad owned. How do they deal with that outpouring of emotion and anger on social media? And what can a business possibly do to protect themselves against that kind of thing?
I think the most important thing to think about when something does happen to a business is think about your consumers and your target market. They need to be reassured that the service or the product that you provide still stands up to what they originally thought it was, or they need to be confident in the fact that the way a situation was dealt with was ethical or professional or whatever it may be. So you need to clarify the facts of the information, and you need to be tactful in how you do that. It's not about, we did this, this person is bonkers and she made a sense, we threw her out. It's about going very succinctly, this is what happened. She came in, she blah, blah, blah. This is how it was dealt with. As with all matters within, you know, Jamaica Blue or within this shopping centre, it has to get referred to security. This is what happened. It was really unfortunate. We apologise for the inconvenience to other people that were dining there that day. We want to reassure everyone that we'll make sure this doesn't happen again. Or if it's something that's not that and it's food poisoning. Again, it's about reassuring people that this was an isolated incident. This is what we have done to ensure this won't happen again, or this is what we've done to fix a situation. And if you have done something wrong, let's say a manager threw them out and that manager was having a terrible day and dealt with her appallingly and she made a scene, and maybe she shouldn't have made a scene, but she did, and anyway, then I would look about, apologise and say, this is not behaviour that we condone from our managers or from our staff. If it's serious enough, then, you know, that I guess it's their call as to where they get rid of them. But people need to reassure that when they re-engage with that business later that day or later that week or next month, that it's a business that they still believe in and they stand by. So, and you can very easily do that through social media, and that's the beauty of social media. You know, it's clarifying the information immediately up front. This is what happened. The Daily Telegraph or the Courier Mail didn't ask us for a response, or when they did ask us for a response, they didn't give us enough time, so we weren't able to get our statement over to them, but we just wanted to clarify to everyone this is exactly what happened. So use those platforms that you have. And if you don't have platforms, let's say you're a Jamaica Blue and it's part of a huge chain and you don't have your own social media account because, for whatever reason, then put a little notice up on your door saying, if anyone read about this today, we just wanted to clarify the information. So, yeah, it's about making sure those touch points are addressed and people are reassured that this is a brand or a business service that they would like to continue dealing with. But it's problematic.
Yeah, and I think I think what you've just said there is the perfect solution. A simple, succinct message out to your customer database I love the idea of just posting something up on the wall at the front of the building, the front of the cafe. I think that sounds to me like the most basic piece of advice ever, but it's one of those pieces of advice that I don't think people even think about.
Well, also, that only captures the people that are willing to walk back into that venue again. You also have to capture the people that are thinking, oh, gosh, I don't want to go to that coffee shop again. I don't like the sound of that story. I don't like how I thought that situation was handled. So that's one way of doing it, but you also have to be able to reach people that aren't walking back in or that are having those second thoughts about it. So that's why, increasing those touch points of how people can engage with your business and making sure they're all managed and something up on your website as well is really important. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, that. And, if you've got an email newsletter and social media, I guess there's plenty of ways that you could get that message out there.
And look, sometimes if someone is, and I'm obviously not inferring this situation because I don't know any of the details, but if someone is just a nut job or is trying to inflame a situation that didn't happen at all, then again, you can deal with that in a way that protects your brand as well. Mm. And people will see that, like all of us, we might read TripAdvisor or whatever review platform, and most of us are adults here, some of us are children, but we can read through information and go, they sound like they're a little bit bonkers that day, or 90% of these reviews are great, and sure, there's 10% that are awful, but if I look at the broader perspective of it, generally, it's really positive reviews. So address them where you can to reassure your customers that it has been managed.
Yeah.
Appropriately.
And by no means, I'm sure there's, this is one of those incidents where I look at it and just go, there's something we don't understand here. There's a part of the story that we're missing. Somebody has said something somewhere along the line that somebody else has taken offense to. And then it's one of those crappy situations where nobody's wrong and nobody's right. And it's just spiraled out of control and then you end up in the news, and
that's really unfortunate.
And it's unfortunate. Nobody wants to see somebody with a disability, be picked on or be ejected from a cafe or be treated any differently than anybody else, But at the same time, you also don't want to see people have their entire businesses wrecked just because they've done something stupid one day. It seems, it seems that often these are massive overreactions to, what are minor incidences that should never have happened in the first place.
We've seen this, and not so much in the last few years that I can recall, but certainly at least 5 years ago, or maybe closer to 10 years ago, there was a couple of, restaurant reviewers in Australia that wrote really poor reviews on restaurants, and those restaurants had to close because they didn't just say, look, there were some good bits and a bad bits. That person obviously had an experience, and their job is to write about restaurants. So, the question could be, well, do you write about them if you had a bad experience, or do you not write about them? For whatever, they wrote about it and it had really horrible effects on that business, and there's a lot of debate about that. So it can happen across anything.
I seem to remember there was a restaurant in Ireland or something like that had thrown somebody out for some reason, and they'd all got high and mighty about it because I think they'd been thrown out because they were a vegan or something, or they'd asked for something that the restaurant didn't have, and everything got thrown out, and the restaurant said their business had never been better after they got all the negative media. And I guess that's probably a question, is sometimes I guess that negative media can actually sometimes turn into a positive. I guess you've just got to be careful how that, how you handle that sort of thing.
Exactly. Again, you think about your target consumers, and if someone comes in and they write a really bad review, or they go crazy because you're a vegan restaurant and you don't have a beef burger on the menu or whatever it is, then absolutely you can run with that and say, you know, we do not want people that want meat in this venue. We are whatever it may be. You know, you can stand by your values of who you are if you believe that's what your target consumers want. But if you have quite a broad industry that attracts a wide variety of people, you just have to keep that in mind. Is, are you going to ostracize a large portion of your market if you side with one view or one opinion?
Yeah. Yeah, it reminds me of a story I read on Twitter the other way, and I don't know whether this is true, but I did. God hope it's true, was a story about Elvis's management years and years ago in the, you know, back when Elvis was obviously number one alive and number two famous, was that they were struggling to sell any more Elvis merchandise because they pretty much sold everything and everybody had Elvis merchandise. So they'd started selling I hate Elvis badges and did an absolutely roaring trade in I hate Elvis merchandise. which I just think is one of the best stories ever.
That's,
you know, if you've completely capitalized and sold out on your existing target market, start selling anti product stuff to those people who hate you.
Yes, that's a really smart move. Anyway, I like that.
Maybe Jamaica Blue could come up with a t-shirt that you know, I've thrown out an ALP candidate, but
I think that Simon.
Yeah, I think that might be. I think that might be throwing fuel onto the fire.
A little inflammatory, but I see where you're going, and I like your creative thinking.
Probably not one of my best ideas. But also, I guess the other thing with this is often that because the news cycle is so quick these days, that there's an element where some of these businesses, if they just sometimes just shut their mouth and stay quiet for a couple of days, then, you know, it's kind of blown over and they might just never hear about it again.
That is certainly a consideration as well. And again, if you don't think your target market are really going to read the publication or are going to be affected by something that has happened, then that is a consideration that you should think about. Again, it just comes back to how is this going to impact my, how deeply will this impact my business if I don't respond to it? Will people be turned away from it? So it's absolutely a tactic that could be considered. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Brooke, for your time today. I also didn't make the comment that Brooke Burns is just the most amazing name for a PR person. It just, it's like you were branded at birth to be Brooke Burns.
Well, you know there's a celebrity. There's a celebrity called Brooke Burns in America. Well, I say celebrity. Yeah. I think she's like an F grade celebrity. I think maybe she was married. I don't know, married to someone in Baywatch. Anyway, it hasn't been a problem for me in my life so far. I do not get confused with the person from America. But yes, it certainly isn't easy.
It's one of those names. It's like it's like a Max Power when Homer Simpson decided to rebrand himself as Max Power.
Yeah, or something out of like Dynasty or
like a 1980 LA Law. LA Law. That was my go to firstly. That was what made me want to be a lawyer, which I did 3 years of a law degree and then went, like LA Law, so fuck this shit. And let's go and do something else. So anyway, thank you for being on the show. It's been very educational, very enlightening. Have a good weekend, and thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure, and thank you so much for having me on.